Marin. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning to all you out there who think you've earned the right to be a hypocrite. Good morning to you. Good morning, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to all my friends out there on the West Coast, specifically a particular insomniac who chose to leave a message on the machine. Very nice to hear from you. And I'm not even going to go into it, Riley. I'm just going to leave it right there, Mark Riley. Good morning to you, sir.
I do not have a specific recollection.
Yes, I understand. Kalo the Costco Ho, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, baby.
What'd you bring in today? Did you bring a vat of noodles, 25 pieces of bags of jerky? What do we got?
One cup of noodle, and I got an orange for my friend Dan Pashman.
Dan Pashman is Mr. Sunshine State this morning.
The son of Lewis and Linda Pashman received a crate of oranges from Grandma Pashman somewhere in Florida. So we've all been
learning. They were wonderful, though.
Yeah, we've been
learning. But I don't have any specific recollection
of... Oh, yeah. You're talking about Gonzalez?
That's his middle name now.
Mm-hmm.
Alberto, I do not have a specific recollection.
That's everybody. That's what people do when they get freaked out. You know what I mean? That's what they do when they lie. That's what politicians do when they lie. It's like, I don't know. I knew a guy that, nah, it's different.
You know what's scaring me?
What?
We could end up talking for 3 hours about nothing but this administration's crap.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, don't we do that a lot?
We do, but it's going to be depressing with this election coming up in 2 days and George W. Bush sitting up doing yet another interview. We're going to get into all this later this morning.
Well, they're having a hard time getting all the D-bulb machines set up in Iraq, but once they do, apparently the fix is in. They know exactly what's going to happen. They're going to have a strategy for leaving and everything else. What are you going to do this weekend, Riley? And then we'll get into the news.
I'm going to chill, man. I'm not really going to do a whole heck of a lot. I'm going to sit home. Hopefully it won't be as cold tomorrow as it was this morning when it was 8 degrees here in New York on the way in. And by the way, it always goes down, you know, between the time we come in and daybreak, it goes down like 2-3 degrees, probably 5 about now.
Well, it's crazy. Clutch Larson and I have our daily walk downtown these days where we walk about 15 blocks. And, you know, you don't really realize it's cold until like, hey, dude, my face hurts.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I say, well, it's killing me.
Yay! No snare drum on there?
I don't know. Do I still have one? Oh, here it is. Oh, a little late. It's all about the timing. You know, timing. Is that the oldest trick in the book or what? I like the pig sounds myself. Because, you know, I'm reading this article, you know, about cloning, about gene splicing, about chimeras. Is that how you pronounce it? Chimeras?
Uh-huh.
Half man, half beast, the great mythological creature. It's starting to become a reality. Riley, it's becoming a reality. They are now in laboratories.
Oh, was that thing about that rat boy thing?
Well, that's what you said it was. Chinese scientists at the Shanghai Second Medical University in 2003 successfully fused human cells with rabbit eggs. This is like 3 years ago, but now there's like they're trying to discuss, you know, what are the implications for people? If you're going to start mixing species in the petri dish for specific research reasons, don't we got to draw up some plans, you know, for when, you know, one of these things slips by and slips into the fallopian tube and all of a sudden you give birth to rabbit boy? Yeah. What happens that day? It's like, well, what do we do with it? Well, we've got to decide what its rights are as a rabbit boy.
And suppose they, you know, suddenly start growing like real big rabbit boys.
Yeah.
You know, like 10 feet tall rabbit boys.
And this cat, you know, what do they say? But creating human-animal chimeras named that, right, has raised, troubling questions. What new subhuman combination should be produced and for what purpose? At what point would it be considered human? And what rights, if any, should it have?
It's alive!
Well, it's just like, it's weird because, you know, they started doing this a while ago. They use pig valves in human hearts when people need hearts. They use valves from cow's hearts in human beings.
I have pig cartilage in my right knee.
And you're a guy that doesn't eat swine.
And I don't eat swine. But at the time, I was involved in a car accident. I got hit by a car. And when they reconstructed my knee, the guy told me, the doctor said, well, we use pig cartilage because it works better.
But isn't that interesting? You are on some level, you know, actively sharing biological material. You're sharing genetic material with a pig.
Ooh,
Yeah, and I think that on some level, maybe your decision to not eat swine was because you don't want to be a cannibal on some level.
Yeah, well, yeah, because I don't want to eat my leg.
Well, that's the creepy thing about this is that, like, you know, if they start infusing other species' genes into our food and into our bodies, on some level, you know, or infusing human genes into pigs and into cattle and into, you know, whatever other animals we
can create
to eat.
A Mr. Ed.
Well, what happens is we get a, you know, we start, there's a cannibalism at the bottom of it, that you are on some level eating human material.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, they already feed, what is it, cows?
Uh-huh.
Don't they feed cows meal that includes ground up cow?
They can't do that anymore.
They stopped doing it. Okay.
That's because that's where Mad Cow came from. And there are other Creutzfeldt's. What's the other? There's another syndrome that they find that only exists. It used to exist just in New Guinea in cannibal cultures that could come back. And I think it's some derivative of
kind of like
the
incest,
mad cow.
Man. I'm not down with any of that.
Yeah, but you don't know this stuff is going on. This stuff, literally, when I was reading this earlier, Riley, I got nauseous. You know, because this guy David Magnus, director of the Stanford Center for Biomedical Ethics at Stanford University, believes. Real worry is whether or not chimeras will be put to uses that are problematic, risky, or dangerous. For example, an experiment that would raise concerns, he said, is genetically engineering mice to produce human sperm and eggs and doing in vitro fertilization to produce a child whose parents are basically a pair of mice.
Rat Boy Smith.
But what do you tell that kid? You know, it's like, where do babies come from?
I have some cheese.
Let's go to the pet store. You know what I mean? Most people would find that problematic, Magnus said, but those uses are bizarre and not, to the best of my knowledge, anything that anybody's remotely contemplating. Are you kidding me? There have got to be scientists, you know, like Dr. Moreau. Now we can make the perfect animals.
What is the law?
Yeah. And how? What about, you know, we're talking about name calling. Imagine the names it'll be called with the, you know, when guys with rabbit ears.
I would have a lot of trouble not calling somebody Rat Boy if I knew that was his genealogy.
Well, there's a movie called Rat Boy, I think, about a guy that kind of looked like a rat, and that's sort of what the movie Freaks is all about. That's the moral of that story when she becomes Chicken Lady at the end.
Well, it's like, you know, you don't tamper with... And see, this was the whole point of Frankenstein and all of those early movies in the 30s. You know, you don't tamper with what God has created. That was the whole, you know, the whole point in the moral. And now, a couple generations later, you have the actual biological capability to do just that. To do what Frankenstein envisioned in a novel that was made in the 1830s, I believe.
Yeah, it just blows me away. It just gives me the willies a little bit. I mean, obviously, I'm all for medical advances, and I don't want to stop that. But just to know the irresponsibility that eventually, once, you know, people get greedy and they get overly curious, that they're not going to be able to stop themselves from creating monsters because they want to. And there's already, I'm sure, a lot of monsters out there that we don't even know about. I don't know what they've spliced human genes into.
But you know what? Flip this for a minute. Suppose you, went forward with this sort of thing.
Okay.
And created a generation of rat children that were, like, really, really intelligent.
Right.
More intelligent than humans.
Right.
Because, you know, there's always an unintended consequence for messing with this.
Sure, then there'll be the great wars between the rat people and the regular people.
The rat people and the regular people, and we can have a great movie on our hands, starring Will Smith.
So then it'd actually be, you know, in terms of evolution, that's one of those weird questions is what is our role in it? You know,
yeah.
Is this all part of the big plan that, you know, by learning how to exploit other beings and other animals and other life forms, are we actually
sowing the seeds of our own destruction?
Or is this part of progress? I mean, I guess that's the big debate, isn't it?
Or it could be both.
I don't know.
It really could be both. It could be progress and sowing the seeds of our own destruction.
So we've got a lot of stuff on the table today. We're going to talk in a minute about Iraq. We're going to have Orzu Daragahi on the phone from Iraq, hopefully. I think it's going to work out today.
We got a new piece of technology. I don't know if you really want to talk about this. But,
I don't
know
about
this,
it.
Well, we got this thing here. Kalo's been messing with it.
Kalo the Costco Ho is a computer genius.
Yes.
Maybe.
He's got a Macintosh. That proves it.
He worked with Juan down the hall, the other computer genius, who is actually, I think Juan's a real wizard, right, Caleb?
Yes, he's the real wizard.
He's the real wizard.
So now we're all linked up. We're hooked up. You can do it. Apparently, what's it called? What kind of line?
Skype.
Skype. And I can do this from at home, too?
Yeah, apparently. That's
like
what they tell me.
You just stick a microphone on your computer, and you can talk for free to anybody in the world if they have the same microphone through a program.
Yeah.
Or through it's almost like an IM.
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't
pretty
know
much.
It was free.
It's IM it's IM except with voice.
Isn't that called a phone?
Except you're not paying to call Iraq.
Well, other people know about this, or is this something just you know about?
No, it's not a secret. Everyone knows about it.
All right, so why doesn't everybody have it then? What, am I stupid?
I don't know. Go out and buy it.
Question, why are you sitting there nodding like you have it? Do you have it at home?
He's got the capability to have it.
You say your brother's been begging you to do it, but you're sitting there when I'm saying, what am I, stupid? And you're going, yes, you are stupid, but you haven't done it either? I'm going to get one.
You're going to get one? A Skype?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
How many people do you know you'd be able to talk to, though?
What? I know. I can call my wife.
Here's some more of that boy stuff again, folks.
She's been trying to get me on T-Mobile because you can talk to other T-Mobile customers for free, and I have this...
can do that with a singular, same thing.
Oh, maybe it's singular.
Yeah.
I'm not
plugging
in Verizon.
Verizon.
Me I got the only one that doesn't do that? That Sprint's the only one that doesn't do that, and I signed a one-year deal for... You know, it's so weird that just because you sign a contract, it's like, if you break the contract, I'm going to be out, $100? You're like, you know, I'm going to stay in this for a year. It's ridiculous.
But a year goes by quick.
I'm getting on Skype.
There you go.
I'm going to get her on it, too.
Yeah.
But you can't move, right? You got to sit there at your computer. It's not like you can go anywhere else unless you... Can you hook it up to a BlackBerry?
You should be able to hook it up to a wireless, can't you? If you got a wireless mic.
Man, there's a lot of speculating going on.
Woo.
But now I got to get a BlackBerry, and I got to get a wireless mic. There's a million things I got to get. I just want one thing. All right. So let's talk about Iraq, and we're going to talk to Borzu on the Skype after this, 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningsEdition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningsEdition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
What is it?
Twenty-one past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning. Morning
Sedition on Air America Radio. Soon, Riley. Soon they will have trees that grow pancreases.
Ooh.
That's right. They will be houseplants that grow livers.
Uh-oh.
It's all coming down when they get it all just right. It's like, hey, don't worry. We can just take your lungs out of the ground. They're a root vegetable now. Look, look, just pull it up right by the roots. That's a human lung. Now we just have to figure out how to put it in. Hey. What's going on, man? Okay, so here's the deal. It looks like there's some talk about some real exit strategies. The United States and Britain, apparently, have privately agreed on some sort of strategy. Is that true, Riley? Am I wrong?
Well, you know, you're right. And let's take a minute to deconstruct what we have going
on.
Let's
take a few minutes.
Tony Blair.
Okay.
Prime Minister of Great Britain.
Yeah.
Due to be up for election in May.
Uh-huh.
In Britain, and I know this because I was there,
yeah,
they hate the war in Iraq.
Sure.
They hate it.
They hate the fact that
the British are even involved in it,
mm-hmm,
to a far greater extent, I think, in terms of the total percentage of the population than here. I mean, people are just vehemently, not all, but a lot of people in Britain are vehemently anti-war, and Tony Blair wants to take Iraq off the table as an election issue. Even though his opposition is not really all that strong.
Right.
So it's in his interest and his people's interest to come up with an exit strategy. What's interesting about the American side of this,
yes,
because this has been done through the two equivalent secretaries of defense, Rumsfeld and a guy by the name of Hoon. And what they're doing is looking at the recommendations of, you remember, General Luck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guy they sent over there to assess how horrible it's going.
Well, you know, he actually has sent back some recommendations and assessments.
Yeah.
We haven't heard much about them yet, right? What he essentially said was, look, you need to have more trained Iraqi troops. Duh. And he's talking about a near doubling, so that you're talking about maybe 10,000-15,000 trained Iraqi police and security forces in the country.
Now, do you think this doubling, Riley, is sort of like, well, you know, 2 out of 3? You know, if we can train, you know, 400,000 of them, then, you know, just by increasing the numbers, we'll get 200,000. That'll really be efficient and do the job without fear.
No. Look, they got no guarantees, and Luck, I think, would be the first one to admit, they got no guarantees right now, even especially after the election, that the Iraqi police and security people and the military are actually going to stay on these jobs and actually do the jobs.
Okay.
One thing, Mark, I don't care whether you're talking about being a subway train operator or being a soldier in Iraq, you can't do it without training.
Right.
You can't do it without the proper amount of training, or else you are subjecting your population to the abuses that come from untrained troops.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we see what's happened with American troops that haven't been, in my judgment, properly trained. Abu Ghraib happened.
Sure.
Because people were not, in part, properly trained.
A lot of things happen. They're not properly equipped. More people die than they need to. They're not properly informed about what's happening on the ground. There's a lot of issues.
But see, the important part about this exit strategy is that they now have built in a reason to keep it secret from both the American and British publics. They say, well, if we have a public timetable for pullout, which, by the way, Senator Ted Kennedy has now called for,
mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that you're signaling something to the insurgents about, you know, the speed of the pullout and that sort of thing, and they don't want to do that. So now they're saying, yes, we've been talking about it privately, but there is no public timetable for the phased withdrawal of coalition troops.
Because they don't want the insurgency and the jihadists and the revolutionary Baathists to have any sort of, where they don't want them to have any sort of future dates to which they can look to blow things up. I had it, you know, I knew the word I wanted to use before I made the list too long. All right, go ahead. Milestones.
Well, they're talking about a multinational force, by the way, in these private conversations that does not now exist. They're talking about the possibility of Italian troops and Spanish troops. And I thought Spain had withdrawn most of their troops at this point. But they want the Spanish and the French and others to help train these new Iraqi forces so that even the Americans and the British would not have the sole or overarching responsibility for the training.
Is that under the auspices of the UN that we're trying to do this? Because it seems to me that whenever the U.S., you know, they'll sit there and go, the UN sucks, we don't want their help, and they don't work for us until it's time to clean up.
I think they would have to talk about some kind of a multilateral force under the auspices of the UN. But see, the scary thing about what General Gary Luck has apparently said, and it's, I find it fascinating that we have no hard evidence about what he's saying. This is all in published reports with regard to other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Luck is saying that it could be years before the Iraqi police force is actually ready to do any policing in the country.
That's what our buddy Anthony LaPay said. He said he looks like those bases they're building there are pretty permanent, but that doesn't stop anybody from leaving. I mean, have you seen, you know, the Bay Area after the boom?
Yeah.
You know, after the high-tech boom, they'll leave buildings empty, they'll leave anything empty. I mean, just because their base is planted there doesn't mean they're not going to bolt.
You know, it seems to me that at some point America's going to have to understand that the problem with Iraq is that the timetables that they set up are not for the Iraqi people, they're for the American policy.
Yeah, American policy, and then some of the timetables are just set up to make people forget that the war even exists.
Yeah.
We'll get into some of that with Borzu Daragahi after this from Baghdad on the Skype.
Yeah. Skype, yeah!
27 past the hour.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Having trouble.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Maybe you saw the article on the AOL homepage about liberal talk radio. You know, the one that Al Franken and what's the other guy's name? Springer. Yeah.
Well, I love his TV show.
And he follows us in Cincinnati, and also and Air America has other personalities on the radio as well. There are other people there on the radio as well.
No.
They had Randy. They had a picture of Randy.
Okay.
We all have to get new pictures.
Yeah, somebody said something about we need new pictures.
You and I are going. Yeah, I did. You mean you were going to get
pictures. My new short, svelte haircut? Is that what?
Everything, Riley. I just want you to be, I want you to look at a picture and go, I'm proud to have that picture.
That's me 1 year older.
That's right. Why is that Jew standing next to me smiling? That's what I want to hear.
That'll be for that magazine, those magazine pictures we took yesterday.
Yeah, speaking about name calling from yesterday, Heave Magazine has chosen me as one of their heaves to watch. Here we go. John Negroponte is the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, and Raymond Ramon, however you know him as, came today dressed as a undercover operative. He had an earpiece in the whole business. So here's a John Negroponte's Palm Pilot for today. 7 a.m., wake up, wait for food taster to eat breakfast. Then, breakfast. 8 a.m., issue hourly press releases assuring the media that everything is fine in Iraq for the elections. from my reinforced concrete bunker 20 feet below the streets of Baghdad. 9 a.m. As usual, lose track of number of civilian war deaths. New line for media, I'm not an accountant. 10 a.m. Call old pals from the Nicaraguan Death Squad days. Tell them I might be able to throw some work their way, depending on how the elections go. 1 p.m. Draw attention away from the charges that Alawi personally executed six insurgents by personally executing six insurgents. 3 p.m. Meet with foreign press. Note, if voter turnout is high, it is a grand victory for democracy. If it is low, that means many potential voters are away on vacation from their high-paid, satisfying jobs in the booming Iraqi economy. 5 p.m. Double-check necessary election day supplies. Ballots, bandages, desks, more bandages, pens, desk full of bandages, and of course, bandages. 9 p.m. Get more bandages. Let's get the truth. Let's get the truth from the ground. We are talking to our regular guest. He is in Baghdad. He is writing now for the Newark Star-Ledger and also the Boston Globe, the San Francisco Chronicle. Borzu, how are you? Borzu Dargahi, good morning. What's going on there? Have they gotten the debold machines in place? Have they purged the voter rolls?
That's a funny question, actually. I asked the Iraqi Election Commission people whether they could give me the names of the companies that are in charge of the ballot boxes, you know, just to get the name of the company. You know, they promised all this transparency and stuff, and they refused. They said that for security reasons, we can't give you the names of the companies that are doing the ballot boxes.
That's interesting.
The ballot boxes from.
They're going to do that here next election, apparently.
So much for her, yeah.
So what, now we've got a report here that one of Alawi's, someone on Alawi's slate was shot, and the video was released by Zarqawi's people. Now, if that happened in this country, one of the candidates would certainly use it as a campaign video. Is that happening?
I don't know if they're using it as a campaign video. There seems to be a lot of last minute politicking going on, mostly on TV. There's been a lot of TV commercials and so on just in the past couple days. But it doesn't really feel like there's an election, you know, going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
The streets are kind of dead and empty, and everyone's really. We went to Friday prayers today this morning, and you know, just sort of driving down the street was a little spooky because there was very few cars.
Borzu, we're seeing reports here that there are going to be 300,000 American, Iraqi, and multinational forces on the streets of cities across the country to secure this election on Sunday. Have you seen any evidence of that? They're saying that American troops are already on the move.
Yeah, I've seen an increased presence of U.S. Armor on the streets, definitely. There seems to be more patrols than there have been in recent weeks. All of a sudden, there's been an increase in the security forces on the street. What is confusing to me is why they haven't, if they can sort of ratchet up the security level and increase the security here so much, why haven't they done it before? Why did they wait until the election to do this? And that's been something that we've been wondering about.
So what do you think?
In terms of why they haven't done the security? I just don't know. I mean, maybe they were wondering whether it would be worth it to put the soldiers in harm's way, except when there's a big media event like this.
Right.
I mean, that's one speculation.
So I think they're pretty dead set on this coming off to looking like an effective and reasonably legitimate election process.
Absolutely. You know, and I can just say that, you know, over the past few weeks, I mean, this is fact. The U.S. Embassy here has been just outrageously friendly towards the media. All the sort of interviews that people had been requesting for months and months are suddenly forthcoming with various high-level officials. They've been flying us around to various parts of the country on these visits to parts of the country that are not accessible via road. And they've been actually really good and informative, these trips. And these just started over the past couple of weeks. It's almost as if they're trying to be nice to us after, you know, maybe not being so nice.
They need you now.
Boys, I wonder about the whole issue of infrastructure repair. I know this is not a normal political campaign in Iraq, and certainly you're in the middle of all this, you know, being in Baghdad. But is the idea of making sure that Iraqis get electricity, that Iraqis get water, has that become a campaign issue? Do some of these slates say in their advertising or in their campaigning that they actually can do that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people claim, I mean, that's the one, those are the sort of one common denominator of all the political parties. You know, everyone seems to be saying the same thing. Basically, security, prosperity, which includes jobs and improved infrastructure and getting electricity up and going, and independence, which means getting the Americans out. And that's everyone's slogan, you know, the security, prosperity, independence. People are short on specifics. I mean, that's familiar to anyone in the U.S. as well in a political campaign. They make promises and so on, but nothing, no one comes through. I've heard a few interesting proposals. One guy is pitching a plan to privatize the oil company, the state-owned oil company, and give each Iraqi family a share.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, that's the most, that's a creative proposal that I've heard.
Wow.
So what are the other, like, so tell me about the campaign slogans. Are people using posters? Are they using television advertising? Are they using the idea that there is no electricity? Are they saying to people, hey, it's dark at home, why don't you come out and vote? You know, what are they doing over there in terms of plastering the message?
Actually, there was a really interesting TV commercial by the Shia list, the one that's blessed by Iraq's supreme religious leader, Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani. Listeners may know about him.
Sure.
There's an ad by that group, and it shows a woman going through this dark room, and she's got like a candle, and that's the sort of the logo for this political list. This is a candle, and you know, I guess that's sort of a reference to the troubles that Iraqis are facing. That, you know, this and they're trying to say that this list is like a candle that'll get you through the dark times.
Wow.
So that, I thought that was kind of clever. That just started airing. You know, there's been a lot of posters all over the city. There's been a lot of political posters all over the city. You know, what's kind of interesting is a lot of the political parties in Iraq have their own satellite TV stations, and they've just been spewing nonstop propaganda for themselves and so on. So sometimes you don't need to buy a TV commercial if you own a TV station.
Good point. Boy, do voters in Iraq that you've talked to expect out of this election a possible timetable for a U.S. pullout?
I think that, you know, it depends on which Iraqis, you know, really. If you talk to the Shia, a lot of the Shia say that we're voting because we want to have the authority to tell the Americans to get out. A lot of the more moderate, secular Shia, they realize or they believe that it's a good idea to keep the Americans here until Iraqi security forces are more stable. If you talk to the Kurds, they don't want the Americans out, you know, they because the occupation doesn't really affect them. So in their minds, you know, the U.S.-led occupation is what's protecting them from the troubles in the rest of Iraq. The Kurds, as listeners may know, have their own autonomous region up in the north. And as far as the Sunnis go, they're not participating in the vote.
Right.
They don't have any hopes for this election.
Borzu Dargahi in Baghdad, thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks a lot. No problem.
All right. Take care, Borzu.
We'll be back with Morning Sedition Radio Theater after this. It's 44 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online at morningsedition.com from Air America Radio.
The Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
Deep in Washington, D.C., lives a group that has the ability to cloud citizens' minds What evil lurks in the heart of the shadow government? Mark Maron knows.
When last we left Mark, his search for Colin Powell had led him and Kid Rock to a dark basement in Washington, D.C. But they weren't alone.
I couldn't believe who was staring me right in the kisser. Ronald Reagan.
Well, not exactly.
How do you like my little experiment, Mark?
Alberto Gonzalez, how did you find me again?
It's not really Ronald Reagan. It's Ronald Reagan 2.0, an evil clone built from stem cell experiments paid for by Nancy Reagan. I brainwashed him and turned him bad. Very, very bad. Ah!
Will, can I kill him now, Senor Alberto?
Patience, 2.0, patience. Now don't let that friendly voice and grandfatherly demeanor fool you, Marin. He's my own private killing machine.
Will, I really want to kill him, Alberto.
I told you no. Now move or no dog food tonight.
This is freaking Kid Rock out. I gotta get out of here. I want my mommy.
Mommy? Kill, 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 kill.
Kid! Kid! Did he really just break me in half? Oh, my life is flashing in front of my eyes, dude. Boobs. Boobs, Walmart, Hot Pockets, Jack Daniels, Pamela's boobs, my old Chevy. That's about it. I'm out of here.
Ugh. 2.0, strap Mr. Marin to the table. I'm going to introduce him to my own personal media conspiracy.
Hey, ow. Come on. What? Hey, let go of me.
Sorry, but no one can resist my superhuman strength and my cornea ocular charm.
He was right. Within moments, I was strapped down to a table and stretched out worse than the Army Reserves in Iraq.
All right, Mr. Marin. They don't call me the torture master for nothing. Now let's see how tough you are. Buried under a ton of garbage.
I have here a set of facts from the internet which indicate that liberals get all their facts from the internet.
Oh, my God.
Gunshot.
What could be worse than listening to Rush Limbaugh?
Lesbians are delivering our mail.
Now, I'm going to release these diseased rats and let them swarm all over your body.
Oh, my God. What could be worse than listening to Rush Limbaugh?
I've trained these rats to go insane with hunger when I sing the opening lines of It by the classic soft rock group Red. I'm going to drive to Georgetown, call into the radio station, and sing it over the air. By the time I get to the touching second verse about a man being in two places at one time, you'll be right, child.
I was trapped. The rats swarmed over me like 50,000 Ohioans trying to cram into a single voting booth. When all of a sudden, a dame appeared from behind a secret panel. She was a number, all right. As curvy as a congressional district redrawn by Tom DeLay and almost as hot as the polar ice caps in about 30 years.
Need a hand, Seamus?
I'm kind of particular about who saves my life. Who are you and what's your angle?
Let's just say, I got my reason. Careful while I cut these ropes.
But wait a minute, now I'm told we have one of my favorite people on the line, Alberto Gonzalez. Buenos dias, Alberto.
Good afternoon, Rush. I just want to send a message to a very special friend. If a picture paints 1,000 words, then why can't I paint you?
Let's get out of here. That song is stirring those rats into a murderous rage.
It had the same effect on me in high school.
Who is this mysterious woman? What plans does she have for Mark? And how can Ronald Reagan have an evil clone when the original Ronald Reagan was also evil? Come back next time when we hear Ronald Reagan 2.0 say...
We'll be right you again.
That's next time on The Shadow Government. And tune in later as Morning Sedition Radio Theater debuts its very first blaxploitation drama, starring a veteran radio newscaster. Wayne Gilman is News Daddy.
I swear, man. I don't know what you're talking about, man.
You wouldn't be holding out on News Daddy, would you?
No, Daddy, I swear. I got no idea how to get stories online from Newswire when the server goes down.
Then I guess there's only one way you're making deadline. 12 floors down.
My, you're some kind of man.
That's right, brown sugar. And now I'm going to invert your pyramid.
Ooh, what's your name, stranger?
I'm Wayne Gilbert.
That's News Daddy. Later on, Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
All right, good morning. If you're listening, you're just tuning in, 54 past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Where?
It's Morning Sedition, and it's now time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Well, Mark, you know, this is one of those weeks. It was tough to choose. Mm-hmm. A number of people qualified for dog status. Let's start out with the wimps at PBS, who pulled distribution of a kids show that had the nerve to feature a real family headed by a lesbian couple.
Mm.
Then they said that they had nothing to do.
Okay, buddy.
And then they said it had nothing to do with criticism about incoming Education Secretary Margaret Spellings. And how about the British tsunami hoaxer or the Oklahoma lawmaker who wants to put boxing gloves on fighting roosters? All are worthy, but they're edged out by one story we couldn't resist. Richard Moore is a military vehicle expert, a Russian military vehicle expert, who lives in the British town of March. He's been trying to sell, get this, a deactivated Soviet-era missile on eBay. He's also selling the missile's rocket launcher, which remains operational. Mm. eBay told him to remove the missile from its website, not because it's a weapon, but because the two items should have been sold separately. The launcher is still on eBay. The price, just over $35,000. Could it be used with an activated missile? You bet. So, Richard, the world hopes you consider offers for your stuff very, very carefully. In the meantime, you are the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
Yes. God, I
drove myself into a... I can see the quicksand coming in over my head.
It happens, man. It's called a brain skid.
Whoa.
Sometimes in the morning, you're just like, oh, my God, I can't get the car back on the road.
Mommy!
But
Mommy!
We did, man.
Oh, yeah, we did.
So, that guy, I can't believe he was able to keep the rocket launcher on eBay.
The launcher is on eBay. The launcher is fully operational.
See, I think this is just part of the gun rights lobby.
Yeah.
To really protect your home and to really form an effective militia, you must have the same weapons that the U.S. military has.
Oof.
Here's a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Vote absentee in Iraqi elections. Who knows? Your vote really could be the difference this time. 2, work with local zoo to stage parody of Bush's inauguration using hogs, chickens, and baboons. 3, every time someone mentions that Bush wants $80 billion more for the war, say, in dollars? 4, proposed name change, Santa Barbara, California to Santa Barbara Boxer, California.
Yeah.
5, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. The Republicans tried to pay me for my opinions, man. I told them every word is gold, so I want gold for every word, man. Wake up, sheeple. Everyone is lying, man.
Woo!
Sam Whipside coming up at the end of the show, towards the third hour. What else we got?
And speaking of everybody lying, we're going to talk a little bit about Alberto Gonzalez.
I don't remember.
Me neither. I have no recollection.
Was that to before?
I don't know. But I do know this is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning to all you who think you've earned the right to be a hypocrite. Good morning to you. Good morning to people I offended by having a reasonably intelligent discussion about names who thought I was still being insensitive. Good morning to you. One thing I learned from our talk yesterday is that, you know what? Sticks and stones can break your bones, but words can also. That's what I learned yesterday. that little thing you're telling your kids has no bearing in the reality of today's world. There are some words that people insist you cannot use out of context, in context, you know, on paper, out there in the ether, because they are too loaded and too hurtful to too many people. And that's just it. There's the A word, the B word, there's the C word. Can't use the D word or the E word or the F word or the G word. And please don't use the H word. And if you could, the I word, very touchy around certain people who are sensitive to that I word. And, you know, the J, K, L, M, N, O, P words, bad. All right, so if you could, maybe just hand gestures and not the one with the middle finger and try the one, the two fingers. You know, please don't use the one that makes it look like you're doing that with your dad. But, you know, I certainly wasn't seeking to offend, and I do appreciate the people that, you know, wrote in about me using a particular word, and then because I used it out of context, insinuated that I was guilty of something, that I was hiding something. See, that's it.
Hiding what?
Even if you have a conversation about the F word, even if you have a conversation about that, then, you know, even if I were to say it again, they'd be like, well, you're just sublimating, or you're just, you know, you're hiding the fact that you're uncomfortable with your own sexuality, that you're uncomfortable with Mexican people, you're uncomfortable with black people, that even when you have a discussion about just using the word, that implies that you are guilty of it being hateful. It's unbelievable, the triggers that words throw, and there's no solving it, Riley. There's no discussing it. It is what it is. You know, politically correct censorship is what it is, and it's going to exist that, and it's going to be there.
As the great philosopher Sly Stone once said,
yeah,
different strokes for different folks.
That's right. That's fine. And if those different folks want to use their words among their own, then that's fine. But as long as the different strokes, see, I just don't see how on some level that, you know, whether it's the gay community, the Latino community, the black community, whatever, I don't know how, you know, taking these words back isn't doing more to separate people as opposed to bring people together.
Well, here's what you have to do. I think what we have to get invented is some sort of a filter so people who have a problem with words... And see, the other side of this, Mark, that a lot of people have difficulty... they have no difficulty using these words in normal conversation. They have difficulty in hearing the words used in certain contexts.
Right, because, you know, it's always going to be loaded in to them in that context, and I understand that, you know, I didn't want to, certainly wasn't my intention to hurt anybody. That was not the intention.
Oh no, and let me stand up and alongside my partner here. Mark Maron is a caring human being. I just want you all to know that now, okay? He may not always come off that way,
right,
but he is in fact a caring human being.
Yeah, so quit being a wuss.
Yeah. Hey.
I'm kidding.
You know, and the other one, the one about, you know, us being too boys clubby.
Well, that's all right. What are you
going to do? Man focused.
Well, that was a phone call. That was kind of cute. Maybe we'll play that. Oh, she'll just hate that.
Ooh.
I just condescended to that phone call. Anyways, I wanted to say that later in the show, in the third hour, Sam Lipside is coming back. You don't have much time to read the book at this point, obviously.
An hour and change, maybe?
The book is Homeland. It's been our first book on the Morning Sedition Book Club. But I do want you to, if you did read it, if you're one of the people that bought the book and enjoyed it and want to share your feelings about the book or have any specific questions for Sam Lipside when he comes back in the last half hour of the show, I encourage you to get it together and start thinking about that. And I hope some of you call. I don't have my buddy Sam in here sitting here going, didn't anybody read it? I know some of you did because I already got some emails about people saying, you were right, Maron. This is one of the funniest books I've ever read. I do also want to draw attention to the fact that when Dick Cheney was at Auschwitz the other day, he did everything but wear Ugg boots, for God's sakes.
Did
you see him? He might as well have been wearing a ski hat with a happy face on it.
He was I'm plowing my driveway look.
Well, that was it. It's just like he was wearing a sort of a faux military issue parka with a big white fur collar and a ski hat and his big silly hiking boots, and everyone else is dressed appropriately. I mean, we saw this guy on the inauguration. He has the proper attire to look dignified in the cold, but this guy has no respect for anybody. This guy has no... To go to Auschwitz dressed like it was time to go snowboarding is just a great example of what this vice president and what this administration is really about. This is heinous. This is the... He might as well just been... You know, he should have had an Auschwitz flag that he was waving. You know
now,
what I mean?
If you want to see what Mark is talking about...
Yay, Jews!
See, there you go. If you want to see what Mark is talking about, it's we have a link to it on morningsedition.com, to that very picture of Dick Cheney.
Speaking about, you know, torture and people that are non-empathetic and completely incapable of compassion for people other than, you know, the people that they're involved with, Torquemada Gonzalez, Alberto Torquemada Gonzalez, is pulling these sort of like, I can't remember. You're not Reagan, you're not 90, you're not 80, you're not 70, you're not senile, you're not anything, you're lying. And not only is he lying about a couple of very specific things here, Riley. Am I right?
No, you're right. And it's interesting. The Newsweek, Michael Isikoff and Mark Hosenball wrote a piece for the online edition, actually, that talks about the fact that the straight party line vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee on Gonzalez's nomination to be Attorney General was not what was expected initially. Several Democrats who said that they were inclined to vote for Gonzalez voted against him. Now, why would that happen, you ask? Because over and over and over again, both in his written testimony and in the verbal testimony he gave before the committee, there were just too many unanswered questions.
The guy's
shifty.
Too many
vague responses.
He's shifty. And he's weird. His demeanor is like, you know, he's like, he's lying about, he refuses to remember particulars. And this is, that's what it is. It's not a lapse of memory. It's not, I don't recall. It says, I refuse to remember for you.
Well, yeah, and now here's an example of this, Mark, and this is amazing. Gonzalez, in the confirmation hearing, did admit that he and other senior administration officials had engaged in discussions about the boundaries of torture policy and had talked about specific torture techniques like a kind of faux burial alive and whether or not they could be used against captured terrorists. But when he was asked about particulars of that, about the particulars of that meeting, he lapsed into, I do not have a specific recollection about each individual method of questioning discussed.
But he was in the meeting, and he's a young guy. Then, you know, if he really can't remember stuff, maybe they should really consider not nominating him for health reasons. I mean, because he shouldn't be having these memory lapses. Maybe he's got a mental problem. Perhaps he has a brain tumor that's causing him to. I mean, maybe this guy's health should be investigated if he's this unable to recollect things and he's this young a man. It seems questionable, doesn't it?
It seems questionable, and the problem is that we are now seeing, both in Guantanamo and in Iraq, the whole idea of people taking this kind of laissez-faire attitude about torture to its logical conclusion. See, it starts up in the suites, up in the White House, and but it gets played out in these prisons. It gets played out by American military people who think, either think they're doing the right thing or they're absolutely stark-raving nuts.
And dig this, Patrick Leahy, Senator Patrick Leahy, who I like. I believe we've had him on the show, haven't we?
Yeah.
You know, he's an engaging, you know, nadsy guy. He brought up something to Gonzalez about Gonzalez helping George Bush get off the hook during a jury duty thing.
Yeah.
Okay, because, you know, he didn't want George Bush's DWI or DUI or UDI, DWI, drunk while driving while intoxicated, under the influence, whatever they call it in Texas. They didn't want that to be brought to light because he was going to run for, he was the governor at the time. So he gets called for jury duty, so he couldn't remember. All right. Gonzalez himself had sought a meeting in the judge's chambers where he urged that Bush be excused from jury because of conflict of interest.
Yeah, and by the way, the judge, the prosecutor, and the defense attorney in that case all remember the meeting.
And I'll bet you the judge is probably a little older than Gonzalez, and I'm not saying age necessarily deteriorates her memory, but I, as a young man, know that that's true. The truth of the matter is, if this guy can't, if he really has this type of mental problem, I don't know how we can trust him in this position, do you?
Look, this isn't a mental problem. This is a problem of ethics. This is a problem that too many people in the Bush administration have. They are willing to dodge, and you think this is ducking and dodging? Wait till the next Supreme Court nominee comes up in front of the Senate.
Well, all I'm saying is this is very rare that a politician or somebody who's nominated for one of these cabinet posts ever gets taken down for being pathological liars. They are rewarded for that. So I'm saying maybe we should really have him, you know, examined mentally because he's got this horrendous, I don't know what it is. It's a dementia, maybe.
Well, you know, the Ashcroft nomination, when he was nominated to be Attorney General 4 years ago, was very, very close. And it's going to be interesting to see how close this one is. It may go straight down party lines, 55-45.
That guy was a delusional religious fanatic, but that, again, rewarded. Pathological lying, delusional religious fanaticism, rewarded. We're going to be back because we've got a story that, you know, the military, women in the military stripping for Islamic jihadist prisoners, potential suspected jihadists. I mean, I can't even wrap my brain around this story right
now. Thanks, Alberto.
We'll be back, 16 past the hour.
Who are these? Morning Sedition.
On record, it's out. It's no secret anymore.
Morning Sedition from Air America Radio.
Hi.
34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America Radio. This is Morning Sedition, where we do the big work every morning. Right now on the phone, we have Sergeant Kevin Benderman, who is joining us from Georgia with his wife Monica, who is his spokesperson, his official spokesperson, because I'll explain that right now. Kevin was in Iraq from March to September of 2003. Last fall, he was told his tour was being extended and he would be returning to Iraq in January. 1 week before departure, he filed for conscientious objector status, and he was formally charged with desertion. So Monica, his wife, is also on the phone because she can speak a little more freely because she is not being charged with desertion. His unit was deployed to Iraq on January 7th, and his hearing is set for February 7th. Now, Kevin, what made you apply for conscientious objector status? Why don't you give us the whole story behind that?
Well, over the course of my experiences of seeing what goes on in a war zone,
mm-hmm.
just how bad people are treated by this thing, and you know, I saw mass graves full of non-combatants. I saw a young girl that her arm was burned, third-degree burns all the way up to her shoulder. And just seeing things like that and seeing how it dehumanizes our young men and women, that's one of the things that drove me to my decision.
So now you have been, you know, formally charged with desertion. And what does that mean? What are you up against?
Well, there's two charges. One is desertion with intent to avoid hazardous duty, and the other one is missing movement. And both of those charges, if convicted, could bring 7 years imprisonment.
Hmm. Sergeant Kevin Benderman, you mentioned just now how U.S. troops are reacting to the violence in Iraq. I wish you'd go into a little bit more detail about that. How are the troops reacting?
Well, I can't speak for the troops. I can speak for myself.
Okay.
The reaction that I spoke about was about me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not speaking for anyone else.
So you've been in the Army for how long now?
10 years.
And how long were you actually in combat?
I was there from March until September.
And what kind of support are you getting around your statement? Because now, you know, you've not only as a conscientious objector, but now that you've been accused of desertion, what kind of people are coming to your side on this?
Well, there's been a large amount of support from people from all over the world. I've gotten emails from Australia, New Zealand, just Japan, everywhere. It's amazing.
We've heard from actually 28 different countries and thousands of emails from obviously all over the United States, but 28 different countries have responded.
Well, that's interesting, Monica. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what they're saying?
For the most part, it's very, very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
We've had, you know, you have the few dissenters that are, you know, obviously they're going to be negative, but those are fine too. It's good to have the chance to comment. You can't give your perspective if someone doesn't give you a different one sometimes.
Right.
But,
we've talked to a couple of people in the military on the air here who have had similar experiences as your husband, and have you been hearing from any other military people?
There are a good number of military, many retired, some active duty. You know, in their opinions, in all honesty, I would say 5% of the response that we've had has been negative.
Mm-hmm. Only 5%?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people, I guess, will question the fact that Sergeant Benderman applied for CO status after he was ordered to return to Iraq. Is there a connection between those two events?
Well, I don't think it happened after.
No, my initial application was on the 27th, mm-hmm. I mean the 28th of December of 2004.
There's a lot of background that's just not right out there in the media of Kevin's situation and our experiences, and, you know, for good reasons, I think it isn't out there yet. But, you know, there's people just have to know that it's more than just a snap decision that he decided to file for conscientious objector status.
Like what? Like what are some of those things?
Well, the fact that he was in Iraq, that the considerations that he had, his beliefs, the way his mindset changed. Actually, I think he had thoughts about what was happening before he went to Iraq the first time. We talked about it in the discussion of war, and, you know, you're always going to have those questions. Then actually seeing it, reading some of the letters he sent back to me, knowing that, you know, this, his mindset was changing.
Now, the mindset changing from being engaged and being involved with the war effort in a positive way, and changing to what it is now, which is what exactly, Kevin?
Well, you have to understand that if you sit around your living room and discuss something that you've never experienced, you have no real basis on how to judge or base your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've experienced something firsthand and you see it for yourself and you smell it and you see the destruction that it causes, that makes some, well, it made me change the way I was, what I was doing.
So you changed primarily from someone who was involved and engaged in the war process to somebody who is against the war for moral reasons. But what about, how do you feel about the war effort in its entirety?
Well, you have to understand, my family has been involved in the military in this country since the American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So you always hear that, and then you see, we have a society that always plays up the war movies, and they teach you that war is the most honorable way that you can conduct yourself as a human.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after seeing it firsthand, I found out differently.
Do you think that this war is wrong?
No, I think all war is wrong.
Okay.
Not just this war.
Mm-hmm.
This has to go. This is not a political thought of a war. It's just, this is the war that we as a generation are involved in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from what I've been reading, this was really a difficult decision for you, one that you went back and forth on for some time. At one point, you wanted to speak to a chaplain about this, and you never had that opportunity before you made your final decision. Is that true?
Well, once you apply for conscientious objector, your command is required to set up a chaplain's interview and a mental health evaluation. And that was not being done. I tried to call the chaplain myself, and he kept avoiding me.
Do you feel like they're trying to make an example out of you?
Do I feel like they're trying to make an example out of me?
In terms of denying you those rights to talk to a chaplain or for a psychological evaluation, do you think that they are using your case to sort of show what happens to deserters?
No, I don't think that is the case at all, because at that particular time, there were no charges brought against me. So no.
Oh, okay. Now, how's your case looking?
Well, I am dealing with my attorneys, and we have a preliminary hearing on the 7th, and that I will know more about it from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it true that one of your commanding officers said that they would try and find a compromise here and send you into a non-combatant role in Kuwait as opposed to a combat role in Iraq? And why didn't you take that option?
Well, I was not going to be left in Kuwait. Number one, so I felt like this was the only option that I could take, because there was no front line. I mean,
right.
War is everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah, very true. Now, I also understand that Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney got involved in this. How did that happen?
Yeah, well, we contacted her and asked her for assistance, and she drafted a letter and sent it to my commander, stating that she would support my decision on what I was doing, and that she recommended that I be reassigned to the rear detachment.
She's been very supportive, very, very. Her entire office is very positive support.
Well, you know, Kevin Benderman, Monica Benderman, good luck with the trial. Maybe we'll check back in with you as things progress later.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story with us this morning. We will be back with, we got Rapture Watch coming up, my friend.
Ooh.
43 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition.
We are the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
When I wear...
Hey, 47 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio, where we're sitting here every day crunching the numbers, working the angles, parsing the facts, doing the big work.
Yeah.
This is the big work. I'll tell you, man. What do we got? You know what I mean? My buddy Sam Lipsight's coming back next hour, at the middle of the next hour, to talk about Homeland. You've got about 45 minutes to read it. If you haven't read it, morningsedition.com. He's our Book of the Month Club. I hope there's some people out there that want to talk to him about it. Also, you can get all kinds of books and T-shirts, and you can email us at morningsedition@airamericaradio.com. You can go to Pashman's Picks. It's a fun website. The Bible's book of Revelation portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Drain, Oregon. Your Grace.
Bless you, heathen man. Take heed, thy unclean, flesh-worshipping heathens, reveling in the filth of thy own unbridled sexing. Be not deceived, thy demonic readers of books, imbibers of the pagan grape, and connoisseurs of the mid to late Rococo period of French painting, with all those sickly pastels and pale fat ladies. Neither fornicators, coveters, idolaters, adulterers, nor any other man with the ur-sounding suffix shall inherit the kingdom of God. Now as a special treat for our German sinners.
Ach du, nehmen Sie die, thy unfreundlichen Fleisch unbetendent Hub to Heavens, Water Sports Collection, mail the DVDs to my home address, but only in a brown wrap. Und im Schmutz besitzen das umgewirkte Sexing.
You may recall, thrice hebdominals ago, I spaketh unto you about a woman in New Jersey who ate 11 pounds of hamburger, ketchup, relish, and mayonnaise in one sitting. Insert gratuitous clogged turnpike reference here. Kotata matata kakaka bata matata. The week after that, I told you about a man who came to life in a morgue after being struck dead by a car.
Oh, man.
And the week after that, I told you about this guy who's getting paid $37,000 to advertise a snoring remedy on his forehead. Hey, I have Yugo embedded on my ass for the last 2 weeks now. Where's my check? It's bad enough waking up on a slab, but you try coming back from the dead only to find your Filipino manservant has freed himself from the plumbing and made off with your prize fiesta. To wear. But now comes the good news, heathens, for according to a report assembled by the Institute for Public Policy Research and the Center for American Progress, or as I like to call them, the Sinstitute for Satanic Policy Research and the Center for Satan's Progress, I know I'm not even trying anymore. Because of global warming, Earth may already have reached the point of no return in terms of total climate disaster. That's right, heinous hiney kissers. The forecast for the region is a high-pressure hell front coming down from Canada. For it was prophesized in Revelation 5756085 0. Oops, that's not my social security number. Please ignore that. Damn, this is the second time this week. For it was prophesied in Revelation Room 222, and I quote it, "We're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The temperature doth riseth. It does not surprise us. Satan certainly can it." End quote. Is it a party? Is it a party? Worldwide droughts, food shortages, and the complete shutdown of the ocean's thermohaline circulatory system? Yeah, it's a party. And guess who's bringing the righteous dip? Jesus. That's all. So next time you feel yourself sweating more than Elvis passing a meatloaf, put down the Zocor and pick up a Sucret, because you're in for a lot of screaming. Until then, fornicators, keep on fornicating.
Und wir haben das Licht am für Sie und der Hölle.
Man. It's a nice touch with the German Cardinal.
Yeah.
It really is.
Danke.
Yeah. You got some big plans for the weekend, Cardinal?
Yeah. Figured I'd go see The Passion of Christ.
Again?
Take notes.
Yeah.
The devil comes in many forms.
I know.
Mark?
I know. What does that even mean?
It means a lot of things.
You know,
life is a riddle. God is a riddle.
Okay. You have three cats. You know that, right? I have three cats.
Three cats.
Yeah.
666.
Yeah, I know. That'd be three cats times two. Did you do the math that quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great talking to you. I always enjoy talking to you.
Well, yeah, I wish it were likewise for me.
It's uncomfortable. There are these weird pregnant pauses. And I don't know, man. You know, I'm just trying
Don't be afraid of empty space. You know, life is not, hey, I got to be here all the time. No, it's okay to let people just sit there and think for a while.
You saying that life doesn't have to be furnished, Cardinal? Is that what you're saying?
You lost me a long time ago. Went way over my head on that one.
All right, we'll see you later, buddy.
Whatever.
Oh,
genius!
Don't get your cape stuck in the door. All right? James Brown? Yeah, all right, you take care. Wow, always awkward. You know, but definitely an inspired person.
That oh, yes.
So, dude, let's try and work this out, because I'm not sure why this is blowing my mind other than it's mind-blowing. All right? Okay, let's try. I just want to paint the picture. We have Abu Ghraib. We have torture. We have Gonzalez. We have, you know, everything that's gone on, all the horrors that have gone on in Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo. You have these military contractors, these interrogators, professional interrogators, these women. All right, you have Muslim, you know, suspected jihadists, terrorists, whatever they want to call them. All right, they are strapped to a chair. These women, these military contractors, these interrogators, they put down the electrodes, and they don't even use the electrodes. They come up with the bright idea: Muslims are, you know, fanatically, you know, racist, you know, and treat women badly, force them to cover themselves, and they're not allowed to talk. If they're menstruating, they have to, you know, not even be touched. They have to be in a different room.
Yeah,
all right?
They're considered unclean.
Right. There's a little of that in the Orthodox Jewish religion as well. That's similar stuff. Now, okay, so these interrogators strap these guys to a chair and basically put on a thong. Put on a miniskirt, put on a bra, and rub their breasts on them, put their, you know, do sexualized dancing for them, basically a strip act,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, just to make them completely uncomfortable. And then, honestly, they reach into their pants, and they put some red dye in their hand and rub it on the face of the suspected jihadist, who is strapped to a chair, saying, you know, presenting it as menstrual blood, and freaking these guys out to the point where they start screaming and crying like children. Now, there's a couple of things that are mind-blowing, is that women are that frightening and that, you know, heinous to these type of religious fanatics, number one. That is disturbing, delusional, and wrong.
Well, see, women being in control is what they're scared to death of.
Well, of course. That's right. That's the bottom line here.
Yeah.
You know, and they're clearly in control in this situation. Okay, now, I guess the big question is, obviously, this is torture of a type, and obviously, it is using some weird. There can be nothing more basic and more, you know, profoundly female and feminine than menstrual blood. So there is something incredibly powerful about this torture device. Using menstrual blood as a torture device, to me, is mind-blowing. I mean, there's so many levels of wrong and weird in this particular situation, I can't even parse it, my friend. But there's also something incredibly empowering on a feminine level in terms of, you know, having that effect with a drop of red ink that is presented as menstrual blood and actually watching a man completely unravel and freak out and cry like a child. That's incredible, man.
But, well, you know, you can't lose sight of the ultimate goal here, and that was to break that person, to begin to get that person to give up information through this kind of sensory overload that obviously drove more than one. I mean, this guy who wrote this manuscript, Sar, had witnessed 20 of these types of interrogations. This wasn't anything that was unique or that only happened once. This was something that was, an approved device to get the information they were looking for. And remember that these folks were all under a great deal of pressure to get information. They were not getting credible information. They weren't getting it from Chalabi and those people.
It's weird, because, like, in my head, like, you know, I understand the context you're putting it in, which is the proper context, but in my head, if I separate it all, if I just take it all away from, you know, trying to break these guys down, and just the sort of almost timeless dynamics of, you know, complete religious, fundamental religious sexism at the very core of what this guy is, and the power of the basic, you know, of menstrual blood, of what basically is the essence of femininity in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it to be completely mind-blowing. 866-303-2270. I know mind-blowing is not an adjective that means anything, but if you've got any input on this, especially if you're a woman, what you make of this, 866-303-2270, I'd like to hear you, if you could. We'll be back in a, you know, actually a couple of minutes. Right, Mark?
That's right. We got Sam Lipsight coming up in the next hour, Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
It's good morning, geniuses, philosophers, kings and queens, working class heroes, people who think they've earned the right to be hypocrites. Good morning to you. Good morning to all of you progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to everybody that you know, has a problem with the A word, the B word, the C word, the D word, the E word, the F word, the G word, the H word. You know where I'm going with this. All right? Here's some hand signals for you. Great radio. All right. Now, also, Mark Maron, I will be performing at the Poway Center for the Performing Arts near San Diego on February 12th. I will be doing the Jerusalem Syndrome, which I'm pulling out of the back of my head and polishing it off, the epic, sort of insane, you know, spiritual and narcissistic and beatnik, drug-riddled monologue that I did off-Broadway for many months, almost a year. Also, we're looking for a spy. That's right. If you've got a kid who's going to be learning intelligent design in school, we want you to bug him. Bug the kid. We want you to mic him up. Or if you work in a school where they're teaching it, please email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com because we want to figure out what's going on there. In a few minutes, about a half hour, a little less, Sam Lipsight will be here to discuss his book, Homeland. Right now, we're taking some calls about these military contractors, women, who were put in the position to, obviously they took the job, to torture jihadists, potential or suspected terrorists, Muslim men, by, you know, basically stripping for them, rubbing their breasts on them, putting their buttocks in their faces, and then wiping them with fake menstrual blood, which caused some of these men to go into, you know, fits of crying and fear and insane anger. The whole thing just blows my mind. You know, if I take it out of context, even if I put it into context, it blows my mind. We're talking about it with you, Alex, listening in Fort Lauderdale on WINZ. Good morning.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Mark and Mark.
How you doing?
Love you guys. Listen to you all the time.
Thanks, bud. What's on your mind?
This guy my car a few minutes ago and heard you guys talking about this. I wanted to add one additional component that I don't believe you guys brought up maybe yet. The idea, of course, of these women doing what they'd be doing to Muslim men at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is, do you have the sexual politics and kind of the sexism going on there, but you also have the idea that this would be making the Muslim men unclean for prayer.
Right.
So you have these Muslim men in jail, torture situations. There'd be no greater time for them to be closer to their God.
Right.
And so the huge thing, not just, you know, the touching of women and the sexism that's freaking them out, but literally the process would remove them from their own prayer life. They'd be done with it, and they'd think, you know, God was further away from them than they were.
So you're saying that a drop of menstrual blood will completely disconnect them from their God. If that isn't the deepest form of sexism I've ever heard, it's, you know, one of them anyways. It's hard to imagine it being any worse than that. Well, obviously it isn't, but I'm saying it's institutional dogmatic sexism. Literally, if you touch a woman at a certain point of her cycle, that you will be disconnected from God.
Right. Absolutely. There's, I mean, like you said, there's so many things to this. I mean, that, the institutional sexism of the belief system, and then on top of that, you know, the using their own belief system in torture, I think, is a scary component, too. I mean, it does paint it, maybe in some people's eyes around the world, as turning it into more of a religious-looking war.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. And that's also, that came through with some of the other, the torture that went on in Abu Ghraib as well, that they were forced to...
Yeah.
You know, into sexualized situations. Thanks for your call, buddy.
Well, you know what that does too, Mark. That really embeds that kind of hatred of Americans. Because that becomes representative. This kind of behavior becomes representative of what Americans will do.
Uh-huh.
Even though it may be atypical behavior, it may be the behavior of, you know, a few rogue interrogators, whatever it is, in the minds of these people who have had to go through it, it becomes the way Americans act.
Yeah. Absolutely, you know, and it's just this is a whole new version of that for me. This story really blew my mind. Issa, listening to WLIB in Manhattan. Good morning.
Hi, Issa.
Hi, guys. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
I guess I'm not going to repeat the whole part about, you know, how awful this is for a Muslim in terms of how they see women and stuff. I want to respond to your comment, Mark, about how, you know, you wonder if it seems empowering to women to have this much control of someone. Absolutely not. I think that feeling empowered and having control is more like a male thing, at the risk of me sounding sexist. And I think that's how wars started and stuff, because people feel like, you know, that they have control because they have guns or whatever. I don't think women feel that way. I mean, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I'm just so offended by the fact that women would use themselves in that way, and the fact that they have that much control does not make me feel empowered. It makes me feel disgusting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I
you know what I mean?
Sure, I had the same reaction. It was like, you know, it's just a weird sort of question. Is that, you know, first you go to, like, what kind of women would do this? And then my initial question was, were they actually within the military, and is this something that the military expects? Obviously, these women were freelance contractors. And then the reason I used the word empowered was because, you know, on some sort of metaphoric level, the fact that just, you know, a drop of menstrual blood could cause a man of insanely deep religious sexism to literally come unhinged mentally is pretty profound. I'm not saying that this should be a role model for anybody.
No, I know you're not, but I think I just empowered somehow or another isn't the right word to me.
Right.
I mean, you know, if someone ever felt that way, it would just be so horrendous to me.
But remember, too, Issa, that this was a situation where these interrogators had the job of breaking these prisoners. Now, that is, from a technical standpoint, a gender-neutral job. You know, methodology may change, but the bottom line is these interrogators were there to elicit information from these detainees. And I don't necessarily buy the idea that it was empowering to them, but I think they felt they had a job to do, and I think they felt that this, because remember, well, maybe I'm saying remember, maybe we didn't say before that one of these interrogators, according to the guy who chronicled all this, who was a former Army Sergeant Eric Saar, one of these people asked a translator how to break this guy. And that was when the translator, who I believe was male, said that tell the detainee she was menstruating, touch him, then make sure to turn off the water in his cell so he could not wash.
You know, as figures a man would think of something like that.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Issa.
Thanks a lot, Issa. We appreciate it.
That's an even more significant issue, that this was a directive that was created by a man. This was the same idea that they had, that Seymour Hersh talked about with Abu Ghraib, in terms of, like, you know, if you get pictures of these guys in compromising positions,
yes,
and you hold them over them and say, look, you know, we're going to let you go, just remember we got these on file, so you work for us now.
Yeah.
That there was this sort of, like, you know, creating a culture of rats that, you know, that didn't work, you know, because somebody was, you know, bold enough and brave enough to reveal the pictures. But I guess that, you know, metaphorically, what I was thinking is that I've never seen a more specific and, you know, isolated instance of this type of, like, you know, this is specifically what women are made out of in terms of, like, the biology fact of it. That menstrual blood could be this threatening to these guys, to me, is very powerful.
Well, see, the other side of this is that this goes all the way to the top. Okay.
Sure.
This isn't just the interrogators, whose names, by the way, have not been released. We have no idea who we're talking about here.
Right.
But
I think one of them's name was Candy. And the other one comes up.
But this goes straight to the office of Alberto Gonzalez.
Sure.
This goes to the top of the Bush administration. These are the people that were talking about getting around the Geneva Conventions and what constitutes torture and whether or not people who are being detained under certain circumstances should be, whether this kind of conduct should even be considered torture. And it comes down to this.
Sure. You're absolutely right. We're going to take calls, more calls. I want to hear from more women. 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's the Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're taking calls. We have calls. 866-303-2270. There, this is about the torturing of the Muslim men by women who are basically doing some series of striptease and sexual assault on some level, and then menstrual assault, I guess you would call it. I have a palm pilot here in my hand, and after this segment, when we get done talking to you about this, Sam Lipside's going to be in the studio to discuss Homeland. So if you've got questions about that or you've got comments about our Book of the Month Club, 866-303-2270 is the name to write down, make note of, and we will re-solicit those calls at the bottom of this hour. Here today, John Negroponte is the U.S. Ambassador to Iraq. Here is his palm pilot for today, brought to us by Ramon, who is wearing a Secret Service outfit again. 7 a.m., wake up. Wait for the food taster to eat breakfast. Then, breakfast. 8 a.m., issue hourly press releases assuring the media that everything is fine in Iraq for the elections. From my reinforced concrete bunker 20 feet below the streets of Baghdad. 8 a.m. Now we already did that one. 9 a.m. As usual, lose track of number of civilian war deaths. New line for media, I'm not an accountant. You understand? Not an accountant. I'm not a numbers guy. 10 a.m. Call old pals from the Nicaraguan Death Squad days. Tell them I might be able to throw them some work, depending on how elections go. Okay, fellas? So get your equipment, your toolboxes together. 1 p.m. Draw attention away from the charges that Alawi personally executed six insurgents by personally executing six insurgents. Yeah, how about a little of that? Sure. And they have, oh, how about maybe... Oh, wait. There you go. And one for good luck. 3 p.m. Meet with the foreign press. Note, if voter turnout is high, it is a grand victory for democracy. If it is low, that means many potential voters are away on vacation from their high-paid, satisfying jobs in the booming Iraqi economy. 5 p.m. Double-check necessary election day supplies. Ballots. Bandages. Desks. More bandages. Pens. Desks full of bandages. And, of course, bandages. 9 p.m. Get more bandages. There you go. Deirdre in Brooklyn, listening to WLIB. Hello.
Hi, Deirdre.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I've lived overseas quite a bit in countries where women face issues of inequality. And hearing this in the news is just, first of all, so shocking. And secondly, I don't think it promotes women's causes in any of those countries. And I think it also endangers women who are traveling from America, and also women who I just read yesterday in the Army who are, the Pentagon's talking about moving them up into combat on the front lines.
So you're saying that because it's not unlike Abu Ghraib, is it that it makes it actually more dangerous for American women in the military and women's roles in abroad, that they're becoming more demonized because of this behavior?
Right.
Okay. Well, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, she brings up a very interesting question. Why would the U.S. military, even though these people are not necessarily soldiers, But why would they agree to this kind of conduct on the part of people representing this country?
That's exactly what my question was. Were these, you know, they're obviously not in uniform. They're not military personnel. They are contractors. I'd like to know more about them.
Yeah.
Maybe I should investigate why I find this so fascinating within my own self. I'm like, who are these military contractors? Who are these women that would do this, and are they available for parties?
Well, you know, let's see, there you go. I think it seems as though the Pentagon...
I said that only as a joke, Mark.
I understand that. I'm
the guy. Look, it's now it's Marktown.
There you go.
All right, go ahead. What are you saying?
Maybe the Pentagon really kind of deleted most of the information about these interrogations.
Yes.
Because this was a classified document, and according to the report I have here, a lot of it was, in fact, blacked out. A lot of names were blacked out.
Yeah.
So it looks like the Pentagon has a vested interest in not releasing to the public exactly who these people were.
Well, wouldn't it be interesting if they were professional sex industry workers? I mean, I'm not trying to take this into a weird direction. I'm just wondering where they, you know, like, who would find this in their job profile to do this kind of stuff? I just, anyways. Look, Whitney, in listening to, in Toledo, Ohio, on Sirius, how are you?
Hi.
Hi.
Nice. Well, you know, this story is beyond appalling.
It is.
In my opinion, we might as well just kill these poor bastards. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Poor bastards? Yeah,
poor,
okay.
First of all,
all right, just take a breath. You're okay.
Okay, but I'm so disturbed by this. The first fellow that called, Alex,
mm-hmm.
he was talking about the religious context of everything, and
mm-hmm.
I think you sort of missed the point
mm-hmm.
in the fact that we are doing something to them
torture.
I'm not an atheist. I believe in something, but let me just say that if you have a very, very strong fundamental belief in anything,
yes.
all of us who have these fundamental beliefs in whatever we believe in,
like racism, religion, whatever.
Yeah, racism is a good one. You know, if somebody goes and you're a black person and they call you the N-word constantly, you know, it's very demoralizing. Okay, what we have done is beyond demoralizing.
Mm.
It, to me, to take their deep-seated fundamentalist beliefs, which they have a perfect right to, just as my side of my family that's Jewish has a perfect right to their beliefs, their fundamentalist beliefs. Okay, we have gone beyond anything imaginable, in my opinion. And I also feel that these women are the most disgusting to even participate in something like this. I would not want to even know a woman, whether forced to behave this way or not. I would not want to know this type of woman.
Okay.
I don't know. To me, it's like bully crap.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you very much for your call, Whitney. She got worked up about it, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, then there's the issue of, like, you know, okay, so does that mean that, you know, by honoring certain religious freedoms, do we also honor sexism? Do we also honor the racism implicit in those things? Clearly, this is a torture situation, but it's very provocative in the different levels that it hits.
Well, it's provocative on a lot of different levels, but, I mean, from a policy standpoint, where does it go? I mean, now they're saying, of course, that they don't do this at Gitmo anymore. They're saying that they've made reforms. So what are the reforms? Have they gone back to electroshock? Have they gone back to
no
more,
thongs?
No thongs, just common torture devices? Is that any better?
All right, so we're done with these calls, but we do want to hear from you about Homeland, the Sam Lipside book, because he's coming on in a second, 866-303-2270.
Looks like people are calling already.
We're going to be discussing his, the Morning Edition book club's first book, Homeland. He's going to be here, Sam Lipside, 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Mark Riley, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yes.
Morning Sedition is the program. Air America's a network. We are here, Mark Riley, doing the big work every day from 6 to 9 in New York and from whatever time it's on near the neighborhood. 866-303-2270 is the number. Sam Lipsight will be here momentarily. He is the author of the book Homeland, which is our first Morning Sedition Book Club book. We've already got some emails coming in. If you want to talk and have a conversation with the Buddha, he's here. Sam Lipsight is here with his book in hand. If you don't call, well, then we're going to talk anyway, so call him if you read the book, or even if you didn't. It's funny. Funny book, I'm telling you. So wait, let's take, oh wait, we got a call right now. Ted from Nebraska. How are you, Ted?
Good morning, Mark and Mark.
Hey.
As usual, the liberals completely misunderstand the war on terror and completely completely underestimate
the level. Oh, no, I hate when help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no. It's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Hell, Pennsylvania. Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservatives' way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons! It's 20 after the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, liberate one country, get one free! So Mark the Shark is angry, people. Mark the Shark is pissed! And I'm looking at you, Bill O'Reilly. And why do I call you Bill O'Reilly? Listen to this from your radio show 2 days ago. 2 days ago!
Boxer sponsored a bill to halt Syrian support for terrorism. Oh, that worked. Thanks, Senator Boxer. She gets a bill.
Please stop supporting terrorism, Bashir. Please don't do it. Oh, we don't like it. It's bad. Just don't do it, you bad people over there in Syria.
Right, and now here's Mark the Shark, me, from last week. Last week, people!
Oh, my name's Barbara Boxer. I'm from California, and I hate Connie because she's a real woman, and I'm short and angry and a lesbian.
See that? See that? That's my bit, oh, Steely. Thief, 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 thief.
Oh, my name is Bill O'Reilly, and I'm a bald husband who can't think of his own bit, so I have to steal ones from people that are funnier than me. I'm usually too busy paying off co-workers and sexual harassment suits to have time to write it. An original. I have a tiny penis. It doesn't work. And I eat my own poop.
Hey, Bill. O'Reilly. Stay out of my ocean, loser. You've been sharked. Hey. 22 after the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller. Good morning.
Oh, those damn liberals, feminazis.
That's right. Right you are. Right you are. Caller, syndicated columnist should get paid for supporting the Bush administration. In fact, if you got to throw a few bucks to Mark the Shark, do it. Let me show you what I can do for you. Hey, John Kerry. Yeah. Hey, Hillary Clinton. Yeah. Hey, Barbara Boxer. Oh, Mark the Shark hit the wrong button. That's right. Now I'm back on message. Bill O'Reilly. You want more? Show me the money. I'm not some has-been lip noodle like O'Steely. I work for a living. Hey, it's 24 after the hour, time for the Neocon Power Weather Forecast. And the forecast calls for Bill O'Reilly to steal some more bits because he's losing his audience to Mark the Shark. Stick around, Neocons. We'll be back with Toby Key. There it is.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Man, why'd you guys just let me fall off my chair like that?
What
just happened? I don't know, man. Again, it's like once a week I get this thing. I don't know what's going on.
You're too big to catch it.
I don't know.
Off the chair.
I don't know, man. I just like, I don't know if I hurt myself. Whatever. Okay, here we go. Good morning, Sam Lipsight.
Oh, I want to talk to Mark the Shark, man.
Whoa, what do you got to say? What do you want, Sam, you liberal pussy? Come on.
Give me more. I love it, man. I love it.
Silly little book. Your little book means nothing.
May I have another?
A bunch of navel-gazing liberal caca. Oh, wow, man. Just happened again with my friend Sam.
Oh.
Sam Lipsight is the author of Homeland. It is the first book in the book of what we call the Morning Sedition Book Club.
There you go.
You ready for your first set of questions, Sam? Well, I just want to say before we start, even if this is a disaster, I don't want you to...
I don't want you to abandon the book club. People are very excited out there. I'm getting a lot of feedback from people who are really excited about the Morning's Edition book club.
Did somebody tell you that they were jealous?
Yes, the guy. The writer said, how did you get on that? I want that.
Well, you tell him to give us this book and I'll take a look at it.
All right.
Because I've been reading a lot of books lately. But, of course, I've always been a big Sam Witsite fan. Here's an email we got. I want you guys to know that I email in my comments because I am a stutterer. It's not that I'm ashamed to call. It's that it wouldn't make for very compelling radio. People who aren't used to hearing stuttering find it annoying. I finished a reading assignment last night, and this is one of the funniest books I've ever read. I almost feel as though Lewis Milner, is the protagonist, has lived inside my head, even though I went to Catholic school in Dallas, Texas. I think this would make a great series on HBO. Make note of this. I have personally sold four more books for Sam myself.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. I had my own Stacey Rison and the encounter with her and Philly in the mail hauntingly recreated an experience of my own. I knew everyone could relate to this. If you went to high school in this country in a small city, you would definitely relate to it. Maren, I don't know if you mentioned it. I didn't hear it, but the story about Lewis's nickname, Teabag, was a pretty good illustration of the banal evil of calling names. Not only was I a stutterer, but I was also fat, so Porky Pig was a frequent eponym. Is that how you say it?
Sure.
I'm silly. How do you say it, Sam? Tell me.
No, that sounds good.
Okay, good. For my tortured youth, I also did know a guy named Alberto Gonzalez. But not the same one, I'm assuming. Anyways, wanted to ask Sam about authenticity. Obviously, the self-referential nature of the book belies a certain autobiographical quality, but his success as a writer, however modest as he may regard it, is nectar for the soul which undiscovered geniuses have yet to taste. Did it change him? Did getting recognition for his talent shine some light, drying out some dark crevices of his soul, or does it matter? Be well, Richard Sam.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. This guy wants to get deep right off the bat.
Yeah. Nectar of the soul. So the question is really based on this assumption that there's this success associated with the book. And I have to head that off at the pass.
Right? Oh, come on. Now, we've got to tell people that you have there's a collection of stories called Venus Drive, which are mind-blowing. Then there's the first novel, Subject Steve, also a great, funny book. And this is your third book. So I think what he's asking is that, you have a certain barometer by which you judge yourself. There are certain things you will and won't do. I think he's asking that... getting recognition, obviously the type of recognition is not, Sam's a hack, this book will sell millions, Sam's on his way to the Oprah show.
Right.
He's basically saying that...
Can I go on Oprah?
Yeah. Oprah, we're reaching out. Yeah. I don't know, you might be able to get on Springer. Yeah. He's on after us in Cincinnati. So
that's better.
Yeah, right.
So I think that it has... The only type of press that you get is either people not understanding you or saying you're a genius.
I get really polarizing press. Mm-hmm. People either love it or hate it.
Right.
But... Yeah, the recognition helps me keep going, but I also find generally that you get to a certain point and it's just this constant wavering between, I'm a total piece of garbage, I'm a fraud, I'm an imposter, and the dread and the culture of rats and the bleeding come in around then.
Welcome to my every morning.
Yeah, right.
And,
that's so funny.
But then it's sort of peppered with, I'm the best.
Yeah, yeah. As long as that guy said it, that in that piece, that someone I respect. Yeah, I know. I think that's very telling, because I think a lot of what Lewis goes through is a certain amount of self-flagellation and a certain amount of commitment to disappointment in his life, but also celebrating that to a certain degree.
Right. Well, it's trying to find dignity in the onslaught. Dignity in the midst of perpetual humiliation, I think.
And isn't that, everyone? We'll be back with Sam Witsite. The phone number is 866-303-2270 if you'd like to engage with Sam. It's 43 past the hour on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
I can see the runway now. 47 past the hour. It's Friday. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with me, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley there.
Yes, it is.
Here doing the big work for you out there every morning of the week. We got Sam Witsite here in the studio, the author of Homeland, Venus Drive, the subject Steve, Got a few of you on the phone we're going to get to right now. 866-303-2270 is the number to call if you want to talk to Sam about his book. Sam, we've got Peter on the phone from Beverly, Massachusetts, listening to WXXS. So, Peter, I'm told that you have some questions about Across the Pond and Here.
Good morning, Mark.
Yeah, good morning,
Sam. I really liked your book, and I can sort of understand why it might catch on in England quicker than over here, because there's so many thoughts in the sentences. You have to reread a lot of the sentences.
You got to think. It's hard.
And I teach at a university, and I sometimes assign books to read, and I don't think I'd assign this one because it makes you think.
Wow. Wait, now wait, back up, Peter. You said you don't think you'd assign Homeland because it makes you think.
Yeah.
What university are you teaching?
Don't
at Bob Jones?
It's in New York. I don't want to really mention it right now.
But that seems crazy. I mean,
hey, wait a minute. I went to NYU. You don't teach there, do you?
No. Oh.
But what kind of decision is that for a teacher to make? What is that, Peter?
Because of the goals I would have for the course. It's a course in the School of Education, and it's a literacy course. And you assign every once in a while, I assign a book for a reading.
Oh, okay. I was thinking maybe it's an English class, and you're like, this is a bad thing to have in your.
No, for an English class, I would.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your question for Sam.
No, I will. I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to make the comment that. I read a lot of fiction. A lot of it is English, and I grew up going to Catholic schools, and Evelyn Waugh and Graham Greene were what I grew up on, and you had to think a lot when you read it. But when you look at the list of fiction in this country, what's on the bestseller list?
Disappointing.
And there's one quote in here I just wanted to make that Sam made that sticks in my mind. It's on page 68. Pretentious mediocrity must have a place in this world. Why would nature allow for it?
Well, let's have Sam comment. Thank you for your call, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
I think I was talking about a band at that point.
but it's funny that he picked a sentence that means something to him.
Yeah.
You are a crafter of sentences to the point where I once borrowed a Philip Roth book from you, Sabbath Theater, and this is a 500-page book. There's one sentence underlined in the book. One sentence, 400 pages. I go, Sam, why'd you underline that sentence? Sam goes, because it's the best sentence in the book. What's the best sentence in your book, Lipshite?
I think there's a... Oh, man. Pretentious mediocrity must have its place in it.
But why do you think that the success...
I don't know.
It's not a bad literary tradition to be part of, certainly.
No, I think that there's a kind of more developed fiction reading culture over there, maybe. Although American fiction has had some ascendancy in the past. But right now, things are pretty grim over here. There's a lot of kind of... I think that people fall into the habit of reading for information.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they read novels, it's, I love that novel. I learned a lot about the Civil War. Well,
yeah.
Why didn't you just read a history book about the Civil War?
Yeah.
And so people aren't really kind of getting into reading novels that kind of embrace the now, that talk about, where we are, and try to do it with humor, and try to do it with... language that's sort of jacked up and interesting, because I think people feel that clutters their information gleaning, which is the most important thing to them sometimes.
Right, is to give them a sense of history.
They just want a kind of simple story, and that's what a lot of the bestsellers are. They're not very well written, but they kind of deliver certain formulas.
They want to move through emotions and be manipulated and be, taken to a thriller or some sort of conclusion.
Right, I mean, which is not to say I'm not trying to manipulate too, but but maybe in different ways.
You know, it's funny. My favorite novel of all time is Love in the Time of Cholera, because it the language that the guy...
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was originally written in a different language,
right.
A language other than English. But you read it in English, man, it is an amazing, amazing work.
Mm.
Absolutely amazing.
Sarah, someone on the blog wants to know if Jared in the book was based on me.
There's a little piece of Marin in every character.
Uh-oh.
I, my favorite part of the book, there's one part where I laughed... you know, I laughed aloud a lot, but there's a part, because we were reading that book. I think you did read the whole thing. What's that guy who wrote that book about tripping, basically the entire book about his, you know, insistence that, you know, psychotropic.
Oh, breaking open the head.
Breaking open the head, yeah. The psychotropic drugs, not right. Psychotropic, but psychedelic drugs and new psychedelics. He went on this young guy, and this is not a 60s tome. This is by a guy who's our age who went around trying psychedelic substances and insisted that there was another plateau.
Well, he would visit the machine elves, or they would visit him.
Right, that he was pretty sure that these elves were around.
Was his name Carlos Castaneda?
No, but it was a new version of that. But, okay, so there's a section in your book where Lewis Miner's father owns a banquet hall, and they'd right?
Yeah.
And they'd rented the hall out.
To the guys taking these drugs, yeah.
Right, it was a group of people, right?
And it was a convention, really.
A convention of people that were traveling to different realms. And I wish you could find it in the book where you capture this, Lewis walking in and seeing all these people sort of like vomiting and contorting on the floor. And he said, like, there they were, going to different worlds.
Or visiting ancient civilizations.
It's just the juxtaposition between, like, what was really happening and whatever they thought they were doing to me was hilarious.
Well, so maybe they really were, man. I don't know.
Come on, let the satire sit, my friend. But so you were up in Boston doing the book tour?
Yeah.
You encountered some Morning's Edition freaks?
Yeah, there were some serious Morning's Edition freaks.
Uh-huh.
There was a woman who could do an imitation of both Marks, sort of do the exchange.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. I'd love
you
to hear
get
that.
Her on.
That's scaring me about now.
Maybe she should call us.
If you're out there.
So have you gotten any strange input about your book? Have you gotten any of the weird unsolicited emails that I get at home on my email through my website? If people contacted you, what kind of feedback have you gotten out there from the great darkness?
There's a lot of darkness out there, man.
Yeah. And you shine some light in it, Sam.
But the response has been kind of wonderful, just because people have been coming out of the woodwork. They've been coming to readings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
and saying, you know, thank you, you really hit something for me. You really, this resonated with me, and you know, I'm Lewis Miner. I'm Teabag.
Yeah, you got to worry about those guys that show up with T-shirts. I'm Lewis Miner.
Which is strange, because, and this isn't really readers so much as I've noticed with some of the reviews, is a few paragraphs in, people forget that somebody wrote the book, and they just start talking about the character as though he's a real guy. I just want to be like, no, you know?
No, it's a novel.
This is this guy.
And they start
Lewis.
Judging him. They say, oh, he's, you know, we have to do something about him. He's a problem. You know?
Well, it's interesting, that thing that, you know, isn't there a story about William Burroughs where, you know, all of a sudden these two guys came, you know, drove up to his house on choppers? And they were, like, you know, dressed in pink, and they were, like, and they were exactly like these characters from the Nova Express or one of the Soft Machine or whatever, the Soft Boys or whatever the, I can't remember which book it was. But he had that experience where these people showed up, and he's like, oh, my God, didn't I invent these guys? aren't these fictional creations coming to visit me? Well, Sam Lipside, thank you so much for coming, and thank you for being our first Morning's Edition book club.
Keep up the book club, man. It's a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
We are. We're going to, and you're going to tell me who that guy, that friend of yours is. I think you already told Renee, our booker, and I'll definitely check out his book. And right now, have a good weekend, Mark Riley. Have a good weekend to everybody out there listening.
Yeah.
And be careful. And there's our little agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. These are your marching orders for today. 1, vote absentee in Iraqi elections. Who knows? Your vote really could be the difference this time. 2, work with local zoo to stage parody of Bush's inauguration using hogs, chickens, and baboons. 3, every time someone mentions that Bush wants $80 billion more for the war, say, in dollars? 4, proposed name change. Santa Barbara, California to Santa Barbara Boxer, California. And 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. The Republicans tried to pay me for my opinions, man. I told them every word is gold, buddy, so I want gold for every word, man. Wake up, people. Everyone is lying. Have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend, man. On Monday, we're going to take a long look at the concluded Iraqi elections. We're going to be talking to Mick Ware from Baghdad, also Professor Noah Feldman, who of course helped draft Iraq's interim constitution. Plus, we'll get a report from the Beltway from our good friend Bob Cusack.
Right on. Have fun, man.
Have fun, man. Okay. Enjoy yourself down in
Virginia.
Virginia!
Yes.
And Sam, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
This is Air America Radio. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. because two marks are better than one.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi.